I'm not really focused on the NFL. I'm trying to enjoy this with a coach I love and a lot of players that I adore.
Florida overwhelmed previously undefeated Cincinnati 51-24 in the Sugar Bowl. Elsewhere, 8th-ranked Ohio State beat 7th-ranked Oregon 26-17 in the Rose Bowl. And Penn State made Joe Paterno a 19-17 winner over LSU in the Capital One Bowl. Sal Giancrasso, Fox News Radio.
And Jeanette Trapani, one of the oldest survivors of the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire, has died. Her daughter says the 170-year-old passed away at her home in El Dorado Hills, California this week. Trapani was only 4 when the natural disaster took place, but her daughter says memories were fresh in her mom's head, even recalling the smell of smoke in the air from the fire that eventually overtook the city. I'm Ken Duffy, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James, and I've got your Central Coast forecast right here. We're going to have a mix of clouds and sun today with a high of 63 and light winds. And tonight, mostly cloudy, low of 41 with light winds. On Sunday, partly cloudy, high of 66 and light winds. Out there on the Monterey Bay, the northeast winds 5 to 10 knots, becoming northwest in the afternoon. The wind waves less than 2 feet, a west swell of 9 to 11 feet at 14 seconds. And tonight, northwest winds 5 to 10 knots, becoming north after midnight. Wind waves less than 2 feet and a west swell of 8 to 10 feet at 13 seconds. Current temperatures, it's 45 in Salinas, 49 in Watsonville, 52 degrees in Monterey. We're at 55 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios, and the official time, 10:06 and 10 seconds on this Saturday, January 2nd, 2010. Up next, we've got this Saturday special with MZ. Stay tuned, KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Nikki James.
Yo, Nikki.
Yo.
I'm going to say something very original now.
Cool, let's hear it.
Happy New Year, Nikki!
Woo! Happy New Year.
How you be? How was yours?
It was fantastic.
Yeah, what'd you do?
Had a bonfire and a bunch of friends and hung out and drank champagne to cheer it in.
Did you get all liquored up?
Well, I had a few, but that's all I'll say.
Yeah. Well, good.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun.
I was up here at KSCO North and sort of watched the fireworks across the bay. It was pretty cool.
Sweet.
Yeah. And so, we're going to have a barn burner today, I think, I hope.
Okay.
That'd be nice. Yeah, because this is something I've wanted to do for a long time, ever since I've been getting these bills that make my blood pressure go up, you know, from some agency that has had no business sending them in the first place. And after a court case has declared the charges illegal and unconstitutional, they still send the bills and make threats. Anyhow. Should be fun.
Let's do it.
Should be fun. Yeah, okay, let's do it. Oh, no, wait a minute. We don't want to do that first. Here.
Not do that yet.
Yeah, we have to do the good morning thing.
There we go.
Good morning. There we go. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSVO Radio.
Top of the morning to y'all. Welcome to 2010. It's MZ here with hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. If you stay tuned for an hour, you're going to get to hear me welcome you to hour number two of the Saturday Special. I got a referral once in high school because the teacher used to say this story is divided into two parts, part one and part two, and I would crack up, you know, hysterically, and he would send me to the principal for being impudent.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
Okay, so here's the problem.
Once upon a time, there was a mysterious quasi-public agency that declared itself in charge as the ultimate authority to monitor groundwater in a particular county. It unilaterally decided upon a schedule of fees for homeowners and businesses within their self-designated sphere of influence to pay it, not for receiving any water nor particular service, but just for being within its self-declared area of jurisdiction. Now, some people objected to being charged fees for nothing, but when faced with threats that their properties would be liened if they did not pay, most of them elected to not fight and go ahead and pay the fee. This went on for years. One day, a citizens group that had brought suit against the agency for assessing a believed illegal fee won that suit, and the agency was ordered to make refunds to the tune of $13 million. Now, get this. The agency continued to send bills to the people and threaten them if they didn't pay the illegal charges. This is not fiction, it is fact. The agency is the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, and this Saturday, it will receive the coveted KSCO Award for the most arrogant, impudent, and brazen but impotent organization of the last decade. This Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Don't Worry, there is still one local medium that has Cajones Radio, AM 1080 KSCO. We did not, as always, bend over backwards to have balanced representation on this program. I will say that we have done that. The call has gone out to a number of people associated with the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. And it's going to seem probably that only one perspective is represented because only one perspective had people willing to come on. I'll turn off that jingle here. Well, no, I like that jingle.
Music, wonderful music on KSCO.
Make jingles like that anymore. Dude, oh, it's a fabulous big band sound. Let's bring on our guests. We're going to welcome back Harold Griffith, taxpayer advocate from Nick at Noon fame. It's been a while since Harold has been on with us. Welcome, Harold.
How you doing, Mike?
Pretty good, pretty good. How are you?
Fine.
Are you enjoying your 2010? Yet?
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
So far, so good.
And now we will bring on our other guest, John Eiskamp, who is a member of the board of the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. And I guess John has a son also named John Eiskamp. The initials are different. I think yours is John G. Eiskamp. Am I right?
That's right.
And
John
your son,
E.
Oh, John, and he's John E. Okay.
He is the current president of the Santa Cruz Farm Bureau. He's also the young one, and I like to tell people he identified because he's the one with the pleasant personality.
Well, so what kind of a personality do you have?
I've been accused of having something other than a pleasant personality, but I try and get along with all.
By your fellow board members, perchance.
Perchance.
So let's go back. Let's not fast forward. We want to rewind back to when this agency was created. And why? I've never heard of, it doesn't mean there aren't similar agencies, but I've never heard of any agency like this. Usually when someone pays a fee to a water agency or company, it's to receive water. And you don't do that. I mean, I have a well at my property, and shortly after I acquired this property,
I started getting these strange annual bills for, you know, it started out being, I don't know, $50 or something like that annual. It wasn't a whole lot of money, but you know, it was for what, I was asking myself. And, well, you know, this is, you're taxing the aquifer. You know, yeah, it is your well and you own it, but the money is coming, you know, you're putting pressure on the water source that everybody else has, that has to share. So you got to pay some money. What is that? What's that door that's opening and squeaking and closing? Who's
that's my chair, I think.
Uh-oh.
I apologize.
Can you either be stiff and not use the rocking chair or get a different one?
I'll do my best here.
Right, thanks. So anyhow, I was thinking about why am I paying this? And once or twice, you know, in the 19 years now that we've had the radio station, I've brought this up on a open mic Saturday special, and you know, and I've always ended up sort of going ahead and paying the thing and just not complicating my life. And I wished I hadn't done that, because I'd have, I don't know, probably $1,000 more in my name by now. Over the years, the $50 went up to 60 and 80 and then 90 and 90. I don't know if it ever broke 100. But every year, it's money that just sort of bugged me. And then I found out about this lawsuit. In fact, I heard it on the news on KSCO that this water augmentation charge has been declared illegal by a judge, and that you're going to get refunds. So I said, oh great, I'm going to get a refund, and I never got the refund. And then I find that I have to apply for the refund. I have to make a claim for the refund. Why should anybody have to make a claim for a refund from an agency that, don't they have records of who they collected money from and when and how much?
Could I answer that one, Michael?
Who's that, Harold?
This is the way this whole thing works in my study of it. Okay, first of all, when you start getting your tax bill way a long time ago, it was on the property tax bill, and that was illegal. So some people brought that up to Gary Knutson down at the county.
Yeah,
and he took it off of there.
Gary was the county treasurer, right?
The auditor controller.
Oh, auditor controller, okay.
Right. And he took it off the property tax bill because it was an illegal property tax assessment that violated Proposition 13.
Okay.
Because the agency did not have the power to tax property. So they were charging it on the property tax roll, but that was illegal. So then the agency themselves started sending out bills, okay?
Yeah.
And so now it's like, now they're sending out a bill. Well, one thing is if it's not an actual property tax bill under Proposition 13, then it goes by Proposition 218, which is if it could be a property tax bill, but it has to be approved by the people, okay?
Uh-huh.
Or it could be a charge or a fee or an assessment.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those have rules that they have to follow before they send you the bill. But they didn't do that, you see. That's why everybody started complaining. It's not that they can't send you a bill for, you know, to charge you for something like your impact on the groundwater, but every tax you have to get it approved by the people. I mean, that's why the people went and put it into the Constitution, that they want to be aware of what the charge is before they have to pay it.
Yeah.
So that they approve it, so that they agree with the government. Yeah, this is a fair thing, you know, and therefore we're willing to pay for it, or at least the majority of the people are willing to pay for it. So then Bill McGrath, James Skurich, Vince Gizdich, John's son, and Dick Bashoak, and all of these other people went and sued, and Ray Amrine, and on and on and on.
Now, who's Ray Amrine?
Ray Amrine is...
No, can I jump in there?
Go ahead.
Ray was a longtime attorney in Watsonville who died several years ago. Ray was one of the individuals that wrote the initial agency act, which was approved by the legislature establishing this agency in, I think, 1983. And Ray, once I was elected to the board, convinced me that, in fact, the augmentation charge, this pumping charge, which the agency was imposing, was a violation of the law and a violation of the right of overlying property owners to free use of the underlying groundwater, without prior establishment of those rights through an adjudication process. So I was elected to the board in 2000, the end of 2000, and this will be my ninth year on the board. To make a long story short, Ray convinced me that, in fact, that was the truth, and I've been lobbying for the agency to submit the charge to the voters for voter approval for ever since. And Harold just mentioned the individuals that lodged a complaint against the agency. That complaint was, it's a long story, but it in essence was put on hold while the agency in 2003 initiated their own lawsuit against the public in general to verify or validate this charge, the constitutionality of the charge. While that process, which was a long process, was going on in court, the agency created a huge debt for itself, went ahead and completed projects, and did not set aside any funds to cover the possibility that they might lose the lawsuit. The lawsuit was lost. The appellate court filed a decision in May of 2007, and which found the charge to be unconstitutional, and the agency having not the funds to pay to pay off the the amount of money that was collected, opted instead to pay off part of it and then continued to charge the remainder. That revenue that we continue to charge and that bill that you find so offensive, Michael, is required by the agency, revenue required by the agency to prevent it from falling into bankruptcy. So,
But even if it's illegal, were all of the charges declared illegal? I only got a bill. I only remember getting a bill over the years for just one charge. It wasn't a bill that had this for that and that for that and that for that.
Yeah.
It was just one charge.
It's a complex matter. And the bottom line is that the appellate court, although it was asked to rule on an agency ordinance that imposed the charge, it actually, to rule that ordinance to be invalid, it had to rule on the constitutionality of the charge itself. And they did so. The charge that was ruled unconstitutional was the charge that was being levied by the ordinance at the rate of $120 an acre foot. And the court ruled that charge was unconstitutional because it did not comply with the requirements of the state constitution.
So that was that the complete component of the charge, or was there something left over that
that was the complete charge that was levied as a result of that ordinance.
The whole charge is illegal, right?
Correct.
Not any part of it, not part of it illegal,
well,
and the other part legal. So the agency decided for self-preservation that though the court had declared its charges 100% illegal, they continued to charge for part of the charges or something? I don't get it.
That's my opinion, and I believe it's Harold's as well.
Okay, Harold, I'm going to bring Harold back on. The reason I put Harold on hold is because for some reason you're getting a hollow sound here that doesn't sound very and you don't have a radio on, I'm sure, right?
No, I don't.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to bring Harold back on, and maybe that hollow sound will go away.
Well,
okay.
To answer your last thing, there's a part in the settlement agreement between the parties that sued. They put all of these lawsuits together, and then they made a settlement agreement. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And on page 2 of that settlement agreement, which, by the way, doesn't bind anybody except the parties to those lawsuits. Okay? It doesn't bind the general public. But it's instructive because it explains exactly what the attitude of the Skurich lawsuit. What it says is this. The 6th District Court of Appeal entered a judgment validating the $80 augmentation charge. That's the one that is called the Skurich lawsuit, okay? To the extent that the charge is used to fund capital facilities construction, okay? Okay, so during the last year and also during this other lawsuit that's called the Pajaro-Sunny Mesa lawsuit, they asked the agency over and over and over again, how much money are you guys spending on capital facilities construction? And the answer is zero. Zero. None.
Aren't they just – when I called the agency, because right before the end of the year, there was something in my mind that said, there's something I got to do. There are a number of things I got to do before the end of the year. But one of the things is to call the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, mm-hmm. and because in their most recent threatening bill, they threatened to turn me into collections and wreck my credit.
Yeah.
If I didn't pay their charge.
Right.
And so I decided I wanted to ask some questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I called. Now, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't New Year. I called two or three times this last week.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, you know, 4 o'clock on the 31st that I called. And you would expect that most businesses, you know, would have no one there. Whenever I call, I couldn't get through to a human. I was in voicemail hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going in circles and trying all kinds of extensions, and no one was there. And I listened to a group of, if you know your party's extension, dial this number. For a list, press this button. And I did, and I got this big, long list. There must have been 8 or 10 people, you know, whose names and extensions were listed. And so this is a big organization. It's just a bureaucracy, it seems to me, of paper pushers, and that's where the money must have gone.
That's exactly where the money goes.
You know, because what the hell, it's just, so whose idea was this stupid thing?
So for the last year, they've been trying to figure out how to do another charge and how much money they need and what they spend the money on, and that comes at $10.5 million, okay? Because every time when they have this one of these meetings, I go down there and say, look at, the only way you could be charging any money right now for the augmentation charge is if you're spending money for capital facilities construction. And all of these charts that you guys come up with, it says what you need to continue money that you to continue the organization, none of it is for capital facilities construction. So the charges that you're billing people for is illegal, and you even admit it in your settlement agreement.
Well, wait a minute.
And then they don't want to talk about it.
So if they were, you know, spending the money, are you saying that it wouldn't be necessary to get permission from the public for a charge?
Exactly. For capital facilities construction.
I'm not nearly the expert that you are, Harold, on these kinds of things, but I'm 58 years old, and all my life I remember when a new sewage treatment plant is needed or upgrade is needed or something, they put out an election for a bond issue to fund it.
Yeah, well, they changed all that in 1996. Now they only have to do is a negative protest vote for capital facilities constructions for garbage, sewer, and water. But that's only if they're going to deliver water to your house or they're going to come and pick up the garbage. Or if they're going to take the sewage away from your house.
They don't do any of that because everybody that I know, well, I can only speak for myself. Pardon me. In my case, I don't have anybody delivering well to me, delivering water to me except my well.
Exactly.
And my well isn't a body, it's a something.
That's exactly the point right there. If you were living in the city of Watsonville or the city of Santa Cruz and they were delivering water to you, okay? They don't have to get your permission to raise the price. They just have to do a negative protest vote. Okay?
Well, a negative protest vote, which means
they mail everybody an information sheet and say how much they're going to charge you because they're delivering water to your house or they're collecting your sewage, your garbage, and then you mail it in. If 50% of the people mail in a thing and says that's too much, then they can't raise the fee. Okay?
Uh-huh.
But
yeah.
That's not what we got, and you hit the nail right exactly on the head. If they're not giving you any water, right, it's not a water service.
Uh-huh.
If they're not collecting water,
it's a think tank. I mean,
no,
it's an illegal
charge. It violates the Constitution. It specifically says that.
All right. John has been on hold here. Let's bring John back.
Okay.
So, John, can you explain to me why this agency even exists?
Yes, it exists because this was the agency is a creature of the state legislature. It is Section 124 of the appendix to the California State Water Code.
So, are there lots of similar agencies throughout?
There are similar agencies. Yes, we were approved. The voters approved our. The legislation that created the agency in 1983, and it's been going since. Now, the charter of the agency, or basically the function of the agency, was to manage the water resources of the district. And this district includes more or less south Santa Cruz County, north Monterey County, and a little piece of San Benito County, which at the time was within the Aromas Water District. And one of the goals of the legislation, it states, or in the Agency Act, it states that it is understood that the agency will to solve the water problem, the shortage of water, groundwater in the basin, will be obliged to find supplemental sources of water to bring within the agency. At the time,
do you believe there is a shortage of groundwater?
Well, yeah, we definitely are. Overdrafting the aquifers that provide the groundwater
for agriculture.
So
that's not anything that can be contested, like global warming is contested by a lot of people.
No, I don't think so. I think the extent and the rate at which its seawater is intruding and contaminating our aquifers, I think that can be certainly debated. But quite frankly, there really isn't and hasn't been any, as far as I'm concerned, credible studies to identify exactly what's going on. And but the agency, there was at the time the agency was created, a potential for receiving 19,000 acre feet. An acre foot, incidentally, is an acre of land covered to the depth of 1 foot with water. It's about the size of a football field.
Yeah,
and that's 1 acre feet. There was a potential 19,000 acre feet per year entitlement from the State Water Project, the Central Valley Project. But by 1990, it had been well established that there was no surplus water. The agency did not, and our area did not have really an opportunity to ever acquire that 19,000 acre foot entitlement. And from that point on, there was a lot of scurrying around trying to come up with some kind of a plan to provide some source of supplemental water.
I've been told that the my property is over what is known as what I thought was an enormous productive aquifer called
The Aromas Sands. It is a large aquifer, but we are pumping water out of it for agricultural uses and for the city of Watsonville, which has increased its water usage dramatically since I was a kid around here.
Uh-huh.
And we're pumping it out basically faster than it will flow in from the foothills, if you will, and up toward the Santa Cruz Mountains. We're pumping it out faster than it can refill, if you will. And since we're creating what's called a hydraulic depression within the aquifers, is causing seawater to begin to flow in along the coastal areas. Uh-huh. And it is
so even, so even you believe that?
Oh, sure.
Earlier in this conversation, you said that, you know, there's some belief that the seawater intrusion might not be the problem that many people think it is.
Well, it's just exactly. It's obviously something that is happening. You know, years ago, in the 30s, before groundwater usage was extensive in this area, we had what are called artesian wells, even within the city of Watsonville. These are wells which, when drilled through what is called a confining layer, or in this case, a cap of this blue clay material, into the aquifer, the pressure within the aquifer is such that the water will squirt out the well.
Gee, like black gold oil.
Yeah, and then with subsequent use of the aquifers and the water in the aquifers for agriculture, those artesian wells basically disappeared, and now we have the reverse effect. That is a hydraulic depression, if you will, which is now, rather than supporting flow of recharge water to the ocean, it is now causing recharge from the ocean to occur, and it's causing a problem to certain areas along the coast where agricultural wells have become contaminated.
There's a guy who runs ads now and then, big full-page ads that I assume he pays for himself in area newspapers. What's the guy's name? Doug D. Doug Deitch.
Oh, Doug Deitch. Yeah, I knew Doug.
Yeah, and he seems to really have it in for Driscoll Strawberries as as a. Now, here's what I'm remembering. Maybe I should have called him to be on this program.
Well, you could have. I think Doug could probably fill up a program all by himself.
Uh huh. Yeah, because it seems to me that the biggest thing in his life is letting the whole world know that our water is being depleted by one company in particular, well, Driscoll. I mean, I that's the feeling that I get.
Yeah, I know. I don't agree with that, of course, but I have to be balanced in my opinion. I have my own opinion about the legality of this augmentation charge, but I have to. I represent in my district, I'm an elected representative, obviously, of the people. I have to represent those that have agricultural interests and those along the coast, including some of the large growers and whatnot, and be sympathetic to their problems and their needs, too. But it's my opinion.
Are you the only like-minded person on the board? So, I mean, it's...
Oh, I don't think so. I think maybe I spend as much or more time than many of my fellow board members, but... they each have their opinions and in some cases their own agendas, if you will. But that's the nature of a board, which is elected and appointed to represent the public. The idea is to have people of all persuasions on that board. And I think the big problem we have here is that maybe without fully understanding what was happening, the board made decisions in the past which created this monumental debt problem the agency is facing, and subsequent to losing the lawsuits and finding the augmentation charge to be unconstitutional,
well, they
created a major problem for
the
agency.
They didn't do
it to satisfy.
The agency didn't do anything to improve to put in the capital equipment and so forth, right? They didn't do anything to improve the water situation in their area, all they did with all the money was it's $13 million, right, that I said in the promo? Weren't they ordered to refund $13 million ill-collected?
The fundamental charge beneath that, the $80, would have contributed another $20 million in debt had they admitted that it, in fact, was illegal, too.
Oh, my God.
So legal obligation, had this been taken to a final court adjudication, if you will, would have been more on the order of, 20 and 15, roughly, $35 million, which... Was an impossible situation for the agency. But when you say has the agency done anything to provide additional water, they have. The supplemental water that has anticipated to be supplied comes from treated sewage water, recycled water from the Watsonville sewage treatment plant, and then this will be distributed for agricultural use through a pipeline.
So that was a legitimate use of part of that money.
But we didn't. The money was not used to pay for the city's treatment plant. It was we're obligated. The agency has contractual obligations with the city to provide the funds to pay the principal and interest of all bonds that were issued to build that treatment plant, as well as pay all operating and maintenance expenses for the next 40 years.
So,
and yet that
belongs
to the city of Watsonville, not the agency.
How come the city just didn't run bond issues like every other municipality?
Well, then they would have had to obtain voter approval, and I'm not too sure they would have obtained it.
Well, don't people want to have water in their community? If they can't have their own well and people in the cities can't be drilling wells all the time.
Well, here's the problem. Obviously, a city cannot finance a sewer treatment plant project based on water fees or water charges to its citizens. They're two different entities.
Well, sewer fees,
it's a sewer fee.
Yeah, it's a separate, yeah.
But the city already has relatively high sewer fees, and raising sewer fees on industry and whatnot would discourage industry from moving to Watsonville.
Right.
So it's a definite problem.
agency has roughly a $70 million debt, but that doesn't include the debt incurred to pay for and operate and pay for the expenses of the sewer treatment plant. On our books, we treat that as a capital expense. It's a payment for what is our auditors call an intangible asset. That is the future treated sewage water that will be obtained by the agency from the plant and then hopefully sold to the coastal landowners.
Oh, okay.
Michael, I'd like to say something here.
Sure, go ahead, Harold.
The problem, you sound like you're kind of surprised that the government doesn't go and get voter approval, even though the Constitution requires that. You know, this situation in PV Water isn't the only one. They just had another one over in Santa Clara County for the Open Space District, and the Open Space District lost and had to pay back $55 million. What they did different was, over there was, they took the money when they were collecting it and put it in a bank account just in case they lost. Okay?
Oh.
There's another one over in Santa Clara County called the Santa Clara County Water District. And they just lost another one, and they're ordered to pay back $25 million because they collected taxes almost exactly like this PV Water one. But they put the money in a separate account, and they accounted for it, and then they lost, and now they have to pay it back.
Hey.
There's a whole bunch. People would be surprised if they knew all of the different taxes that they have to pay that are illegal.
Yeah, just look at your tax bill, your property tax bill, and probably some of those shouldn't be there, right?
Exactly. But the problem is the district attorney doesn't go and collect, you know, and check all of these collections. The district attorney or the attorney general doesn't go and look at all these things to make sure that they're valid. They'll go and arrest you if you steal a Three Musketeers bar from Knob Hill or somebody. But they're not going to go after a government agency that's charging people tens of billions of dollars or even billions of dollars.
Why?
They don't think that's their job, is to protect us from the government. So what has to happen is you have to have some real, you know, stellar citizens that go out there and sue these people on their own money when they have to pay the attorney's fees if they lose.
Uh-huh.
That takes a lot of guts to do what McGrath and Skurich and Gizdich and Eiskamp and all of these people did. That takes a lot of cojones.
And what they got, they got a judgment.
Yeah.
But that's about it, right?
Well, that's the way it always is. When you sue the government, they try to give you the smallest amount of a victory possible.
Well,
that's just the way it is. And even when they order these people to pay back a lot of money, then you can go and say, you have to request the money or you don't get it. And people don't go and ever request. I mean, people really never like to screw the government on a mistake like that. You know what I'm saying? And so it's pretty mild when you do catch the government doing something wrong, you know?
Wow. John, you wanted to say something, John?
Well, unfortunately, I probably have a lot to say, but
did you think it over?
I don't want to come across as being simply representing the opposite side to the agency. There is another side to this story, but unfortunately, the story is a group of members of the public, myself and the other members of the board, who, in my opinion, have been more or less duped by a variety of consultants that have come in and sort of like if you recall the old children's story of the emperor's new clothes, where the tailors come in and convince the emperor that they can weave a magic cloth and create a clothing for him that only honest people can see. And then, of course, weave the clothing, and everybody agrees, yes, it's the finest set of clothes that we've ever seen and whatnot, except for the one small boy when the emperor came out to display his new raiment and said why he has no clothes. And I think that's kind of what's happened to the board, the various members of the board of directors over the years. They've really kind of been misled, both from legal standpoint and
I wish we're going to open the phone lines here in just a bit, right after our commercial break, which is coming up. You're listening to the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. My name is MZ. We have special guests, Harold Griffith and John Eiskamp. The topic of discussion today is the agency. I called it a quasi-public agency. Was that correct?
No, it's a real public agency.
It is. So forget the quasi. I was not quite right in my promo. It is a public agency, and it is part of the government called the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, which is in big trouble, but it doesn't matter that it's in big trouble. If you and I were basically accused of robbing people, we would be in prison, and we would be forced to make restitution and so forth. But none of that seems to be happening to an agency that continues to send out illegal bills and continues to threaten and terrorize the people. And I think it's disgusting. I really do. But I'm sure there is another side to this story. I have not been successful in getting anybody who might have an alternative opinion. It's very unusual that a board member such as John Eiskamp he's my kind of guy because he thinks the way I do. And thank God he's on the board. But I had a chat with Dennis Osmer, and good guy, not nice person, but I guess John and Dennis are not fans of each other, I guess.
No, I respect Dennis.
Sure. And everybody's got their point of view. But the people who I was able to connect with had other engagements today, but I don't know if they would have shown up anyhow because it's uncomfortable for them. You know, it's uncomfortable. We run into this all the time at KSCO. We think it's a good part of our job to assist the public in being a government watchdog, medium. And by doing that, we're always offering people, time on the radio for people from all perspectives to tell their side of the story.
Yeah.
And much more often than not, one side declines to appear because they just don't want to. Maybe it's because who wants to feel uncomfortable? I don't get it. Anyhow, I guess I do get it. It's time to do a commercial break. You there, Nikki? Hello, Nikki.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh,
ready
good.
When you are.
We're ready. It's the Saturday special, hour number one. If you want to give us a call, 479-1080 in area 831 is the phone number. We have John Eiskamp and Harold Griffith and MZ, and we're talking about Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. Give us a call if you want to. 479-1080, or send an email to mz@ksco.com. Back right after this commercial break.
Hi, Tim Whitlow from Whitlow Concrete. Pleased to sponsor this portion of the Saturday special on KSCO AM 1080. Get ideas for your project from our website, whitlowconcrete.com, and call us at 475-4499 for a free quote. That's 475-4499.
Did you know that vitamin D is a hormone? Your heart, bones, and immune system completely depend on it. But studies say that most Americans do not get enough vitamin D. More and more doctors are telling us we need a vitamin D supplement. Why? Between working indoors and using all that sunscreen, we don't get enough sunshine on our skin to trigger its production. So what do you do when you can't change your lifestyle? Sip of Sunshine to the Rescue, created by America's health diva, Suzanne Summers. Suzanne knows good health and believes she created just what the doctor ordered. Sip of Sunshine is a powerful and delicious strawberry lemonade drink that's better than any soft drink. It's got all the cofactors to bring vitamin D3 to every cell in your body. So refreshing, and no artificial sweeteners. Take a break. Relax away stress and aging with B vitamins and the body's most powerful antioxidant, SOD. Treat yourself today. Call us now, toll-free, 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
If you're planning an office party, a holiday gathering, or a New Year's celebration, remember, for a safe, fun, and festive way to celebrate the holidays, have plenty of Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider on hand.
Martinelli's, in the traditional champagne bottle, is the perfect choice for your holiday gatherings. It has all the elegance and sparkle of champagne, but without the alcohol. And you know, Martinelli's has the best flavor because it's made only from U.S.-grown fresh apples, not from foreign concentrate like most other brands. Martinelli's looks great, tastes great, and complements all your favorite foods, from party snacks and buffets to holiday dinners. Martinelli's, fun, festive, and non-alcoholic. Enjoy the original, Martinelli's Gold Medal Sparkling Cider, a family tradition since 1868.
This is Stephen Martinelli. I'm here with my son, John, the fourth generation president of our family's 140-year-old cider company.
All of us at Martinelli's wish you a safe and festive holiday season and a happy new year.
Hey, gals. Phyllis Anderson here. Have you ever looked at women on TV and thought, I wish my skin looked like that? How do they do it? Really good makeup, that's how. Well, Dr. Wallach, the mineral doctor, has brought us Pure Mineral Makeup. Other brands contain heavy metals, dyes, and fillers you might not want on your face. Yes, we all want to look good, but we also want to protect our skin, keep it young, and keep out toxins. Now, I never used to wear foundation. My skin looked fine. And who wants to smear glop on your face and wear a mask all day? Well, one day I looked in the mirror and saw lots of brown spots from sun exposure. I tried the Youngevity Mineral Makeup and was thrilled. It's so easy to use and feels lighter than air. My skin looks perfect. The brown spots have faded back and my skin has actually improved. Makeup is fun again. Ladies, once you try Youngevity Mineral Makeup, there's no going back. You won't want to leave home without it. Call us now, toll free, 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
I'm Jim Bohannon, host of America in the Morning. Each day, we take you around America and the world to bring you the latest from the Midwest, the Middle East, or the middle of Ground Zero.
A 911 call in the middle of the night. This is Howard Arenstein in Washington.
Peter Mayer, the White House.
David Dow, Los Angeles.
Kimberly Dozier, Islamabad.
And we wake up the newsmakers who wake up the world.
We're joined by Senator Joe Lieberman, former Defense Secretary William Cohen, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu.
And while we keep our eye on the top news, we never lose sight of all the information you need to make your life complete.
Well, Jim, the Northeast has had storm systems sweeping across the Northeast today.
Sports time and Tony Roberts' Morning Drive jumpstarts your day. What jumpstarts your morning drive? We'd like to
join Jim Bohannon on America in the Morning, 5 to 6, Monday through Friday on KSCO.
Welcome back. We are in the closing minutes, 8 minutes or so of the KSCO Saturday special, hour number one. We got hour number two ahead of us, so do stay tuned. We're talking about a government agency that collects monies from the public that it shouldn't collect. And when told by the court that it shouldn't collect it, it continues to collect it or try to collect it and threatens people for not paying the fee. And that would be the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. We've got two guests. One is a taxpayer advocate, Harold Griffin, Griffith, and our other guest is one of the members of the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency board. That would be John Eiskamp. And we're going to open up the phone lines. Give us a call, 479-1080, if you want to get on the radio with us, have an opinion one way or another, particularly if you have an opinion in favor of what the agency is doing. The program isn't very balanced. We haven't tried, but I'm putting out the appeal right now, folks. We really want to hear from you, even if you have, especially if you have a different opinion from the two guests that we have on, because we want to balance comment. So let's go to our first caller here, Tom in Watsonville. Tom, welcome to the Saturday special on AM 1080 KSCO.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you so much for having this program.
Hey, you bet. Are you on a cell phone? Because it sounds breaking up a little bit.
No, I'm on a regular phone.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'm in the same boat you are. I received a letter from them, and I tried like hell to get some answers from that place, and to no avail. My only question, basically, because everything you said was exactly as it is, what can we do about it? Is it take another lawsuit? Because if it does, I'll be the first to donate. I got the letter that they're going to send it to collections. But the only problem is I didn't receive a refund, and when I did finally call them, they told me that I did not send in a form. But if I remember correctly, it said, do nothing and you'll get your refund. I may be wrong about that. At any rate.
Well, it's reasonable. It's reasonable whether it was said or not for an agency that incorrectly charged you. It's not as if they don't know that they incorrectly charge you, and it's not as if they don't have the record of when they incorrectly charged you and every time they did it over the years and what the amount was for each year. So they know what the refund is. You shouldn't
exactly.
have to apply for it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, it's really sneaky and crooked as far as I'm concerned. I'll just say it, and I think it's unconscionable what these people are doing.
As you said, it's been 20. I've paid the fee 20 years, and it's just a little upsetting.
Yeah. So it's probably, you know, $1,500, $2,000 worth of money that you've paid. I haven't paid quite that much, but I'm sure it's over $1,000 by now.
Well, I'm not paying this bill. I'm just
I didn't pay it either. I didn't pay it either. So let's see. Do you want to ask a particular question of Harold or John?
No, they've both been very, very informative, and
okay.
I think the board member there has eased a lot of people's. I wish we could have got this information when you called at the business, but he's been more informative now than I've ever heard from trying to get in touch with somebody. As it stands, I guess I'm one of those that's about to be collected on, I guess.
Here, John, John, you and I had a discussion about that. Let me bring you back on here. What do you think about that? Do you think that Tom and I need to worry about losing our good credit?
Well, I think you'd probably join a group of several thousand or at least 2,000 that would be in the same boat. As I mentioned, the agency is confronting a huge problem in the sense that in this coming June they'll have to come up with a payment of roughly $2 to $3 million to the city of Watsonville to pay for the interest and principal on the bonds the city issued, secured by the revenue contractually obligated by the agency, and also including the operation and maintenance of the recycle water plant. And unless that money can be delivered or borrowed from the city or whatever, the agency will be facing potential Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Chapter 9 being a particular chapter of the bankruptcy code, which is reserved for governmental agencies.
So you think they are going to go after guys like me and Tom?
I find it difficult to believe that because what recourse does the agency really have to send you to collection and then be subject to a cross complaint, a lawsuit for damages? As a board member, I think we would be very ill advised to push the issue. However,
so you think it's a big bluff then, huh?
Well, I can't say.
You think? I know you can't say, but what's your opinion? And you're not talking as a board member now, you're talking as a member of the public.
Well, if I'm talking as a member of the public, and let me say that.
You're just listening to this radio program.
I would almost use the term extortion.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No, that's my public. That's not public opinion. That's my agency opinion.
Right. No, very clear.
You've made that very clear. Quite clear. The compliance, a lot of people feel the way you do, and the compliance in recent billings has only been about 40%. Only about 40%.
See, I've worked hard all my life to have impeccable credit.
Yeah,
and for this this agency to wrongfully to bully me into paying an illegal fee with the threat that my credit is going to be harmed by them. First of all, I don't think anybody should be able to do that, but maybe a government agency is immune. You know, I'm not a deadbeat if I don't pay for something that someone charges me for when I didn't even order it and didn't take it.
Well, that's, you just hit a key. This was ruled by the court to be a fee or charge subject to what is called Prop 218. And that's Section 13, Article 13D of the state constitution that says fees and charges must be meet certain requirements, and one of those requirements is that the fee is in proportion to the service that you have received. And in most cases, these are services that you've requested. For instance, if you're a property owner and you're the city of Watsonville is providing you water, then you requested that service. You don't have to take the water. You can say, I don't want your water anymore, and go buy bottled water if you want. But in this case, you have not been you have not requested any service from the city, from the agency, and you haven't received any service.
And one of the stupidest things I've done in my life, and this was probably 15 years ago, was register my well. They sent me, because I guess my property was in their sphere of influence, they sent me, I'm presuming that's the reason, I got a letter from the agency saying, you must register your well.
Well, that's correct.
And I said, that doesn't sound right. Why would they want me to register a well unless the next step is for me to meter my own well and my own water? And so there was a big old flap about that.
Well,
I've never seen the supervisor. I don't know if the supervisors, the supervisors don't have anything to do with the Powder Valley Water Management Agency. Am I right? There was
No, the water agency has the sole authority to manage groundwater within its district. We're a three county agency, and no county has oversight over the agency.
Right.
So the problem you're saying is that registering the well, the agency at that time interpreted as a request or as an coupled with it, an obligation to pay any augmentation charges that you were billed.
Right.
in fact, that's not the case. So
I foolishly registered my well and have lived to regret that. I wish I could unregister it. Hey, can I do that?
No. We still have an ordinance that says you must register your well.
Oh.
But the current registration, if a person drills a new well, let's say a property owner who rents his land for agriculture or whatever.
Wait a second. hold that thought, okay? Please hold that thought. We're dipping into the news right now. It's KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. We will be right back in 6 or 7 minutes. Stay with us. Here's Fox News in progress.
Including the connections and pathway to Northwest Flight 253, allegedly taken by Umar Farouk Abdulmutallab.
We know that he traveled to Yemen, a country grappling with crushing poverty and deadly insurgencies. It appears that he joined an affiliate of Al-Qaeda, and that this group, Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, trained him, equipped him with those explosives, and directed him to attack that plane headed for America.
The president's Homeland Security team has been piecing together the elements of this incident, and the president, who returns from his Hawaiian vacation tomorrow, will meet with the team on Tuesday. For the Republicans, the weekend speech was a New Year's snapshot of the country's current problems and a reassurance the nation will prevail.
What's always defined America is its ability to overcome even the most daunting difficulties. So in this new year, we can be filled with new hope and optimism that our greatest challenges will be met, that better days are ahead, and that in these difficult times, we will persevere as we always have.
Senate GOP leader Mitch McConnell. In this calm before the 2010 storm begins on Monday, federal health officials are suggesting this might be the time to at least schedule a flu shot.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Richard Quarterone says you should make a New Year's resolution to get inoculated against H1N1 swine flu.
Get vaccinated. Prevent the disease in yourself. Help protect yourself and your loved ones against this disease, because we don't know what the future will hold. We don't know how severe the illness will become.
Officials say the number of people heeding the call to get vaccinated has helped contain the virus a bit, but vigilance is still a good practice. Eben Brown, Fox News Radio.
The death toll in that car bombing at a Pakistani volleyball tournament yesterday. Now nearly 100 tribal elders of that village vowing to continue their resistance to the Taliban. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Baltimore Orioles shortstop Cal Ripken Jr., the Iron Man, broke the record for most consecutive games played, 2,131. The
The record had been held for 56 years before that by Lou Gehrig.
Well, you know, I see myself as someone that was very lucky and had a good career, and I think that I'm pretty good. I mean, I don't put myself all the way down and not think that I've had a pretty significant career. I've enjoyed being in the presence of all the great players and this collection of players. I sat and talked to Henry Aaron a long time and really enjoyed talking to Kirk Gibson and Pete Rose. I just enjoy being in the environment. Maybe when I get older and you start to look back, you may have a historical view of your career. But right now, I just see myself as a guy that was lucky enough to play baseball for a long time.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
You might recall that in 2005, a political cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad with a bomb-shaped turban, one of a series by a dozen different cartoonists published in a Danish newspaper, sparked rioting and outrage across the Muslim world. That particular cartoonist, 74-year-old Kurt Westergaard, has had round-the-clock security protection for the last 5 years. And last night, he apparently needed it. A 28-year-old Somali man with ties to Al-Qaeda breaking into Westergaard's home armed with an axe and a knife, leading to his arrest and subsequent charges.
Two charges of attempted murder, both of which he denies. He said that he didn't come here to kill Kurt Westergaard. He came here just to give him a scare, to give him a fright.
Alistair Bunkle with our sister network Sky News. Westergaard reportedly telling his boss at the newspaper that the man shouted revenge and blood as he tried to break into the safe room where Westergaard had gone to hide. The villa of a private art collector in southern France is the site of a robbery, thieves making off with about 30 paintings, including a Picasso and a painting by the post-impressionist Henri Rousseau, that one alone worth nearly $1.5 million. Well, as you tidy up from this year's take of holiday gifts, a word of advice on pitching your old electronic gizmos.
We would like to play
Yoshi's Island, only for Game Boy Advance.
So you've got all these new toys, and you might be tempted to just toss the old stuff out. But don't, says the Electronics Take Back Coalition. There's nasty stuff inside.
Lead, mercury, cadmium, beryllium, brominated flame retardants.
Barbara Kyle with the Coalition urges people to find an electronics recycler. But she warns not all recyclers are equal.
A lot of recyclers really don't recycle. They export it to developing nations.
Kyle says in addition to the recycler, some manufacturers and retailers are also offering recycling as well. In Washington, Mike Makowitz, Fox News Radio.
A quick trip for a New York City-bound Delta flight out of Boston this morning. 8 minutes into the air, the pilot smelled smoke, turned it around, landed safely back at Logan. Chris Stanley, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. You're tuned in to KSCO 1080. I'm Nikki James. I've got your Central Coast forecast here for the weekend. We're going to have a mixture of clouds and sun today. High of 63, light winds. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Low of 41 and light winds. And Sunday, partly cloudy. High of 66 and light winds. Out there on the Monterey Bay, the northeast winds, 5 to 10 knots, becoming northwest in the afternoon. Wind waves less than 2 feet and a west swell of 9 to 11 feet at 14 seconds. Tonight, northwest winds 5 to 10 knots, becoming north after midnight. Wind waves less than 2 feet and a west swell of 8 to 10 feet at 13 seconds. Current temperatures here for you, 50 degrees in Salinas and 52 in Watsonville. In Monterey, it's 58. We're at 56 here in Santa Cruz, right outside KSCO Studios. Official time is 11:06 and 8 seconds on this Saturday, January 2nd, 2010. Up next, we have the second hour of the Saturday special with MZ. Stay tuned. KSCO Santa Cruz, I'm Nikki James.
Say, Nikki.
Say what?
Have you seen the brand new, improved KSCO.com website?
I looked at it last weekend. I haven't looked at it since.
And you like so, or you no like?
Well, it wasn't quite ready when I looked at it.
It's still not quite. Well, it's ready, but it's not. It's not complete. It's not. We're going to be phasing in more and more features, and that's why I cannot urge strongly enough every listener and every non-listener to go to KSCO.com right now, this minute. And register. It doesn't cost anything. It's free to become a member of Club KSCO. We don't call it that yet, and we might not ultimately call it that. But it's going to be something like that, maybe with a sexier name. And when you do that, you will be eligible to receive prizes, and you'll be eligible to listen to programs on demand, various podcasts. We do have Dead Doctors. We have a Saturday Special, and we have Kay's Commentaries up that are real easy to listen to on demand and real easy to connect with your Twitter or your Facebook account, or send an email to someone that you think should hear a particular Saturday Special, like this one, for example, if you missed it. If there's someone who you really think should be listening to. Now, this program won't be put up until this afternoon. I don't know, probably after 2 or 3 o'clock. But once it's put up, people will be able to go to the website, click on the Saturday Special podcast, and hit play and hear the whole program on demand. And there's also a place for you to click a little email icon, a little envelope type icon. You click on that, and you can email the show to a friend or someone that who you think should have it. So we have taken the big step to become a media company that happens to be connected to a 10,000-watt independently owned and operated radio station that we are very proud of. So, yeah, definitely go to KSCO.com, tell everybody you know, and register. We want to have – I'd like to have 1,000 new registrants by, I don't know, this time next week or something at least. And hopefully it'll be a whole lot more than that. We are talking about the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, and it's longstanding practice of collecting fees, which even after having been declared illegal and unconstitutional by courts, continues to do that, and it's absolutely amazing. But I believe because of why we have what am I doing here? I'm looking at an email here that I shouldn't be doing. What we normally do, because we try to stick to the format a little bit, is play the Caves Commentary, which I believe we have a new one today. Am I right? Nikki? Hello, Nikki. Are you there? Okay, I'm going to need your help, Nikki, to play the K's Commentary.
Yes, you do, and I was on the phone, and I'm ready to play it now.
Oh, good. Yep. Okay, well, so let's do it, and we'll be back, and right after the K's Commentary, we will resume our topic.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is K's Whirling.
The title of this is Israelis Baffled by News of Defenseless U.S. Soldiers. It would be remiss to let this story go away without exposing the one simple reason why that tragedy had to happen. Like a broken record for many years since political correctness was created by the foolish American left and spread quickly all over Europe in the early 1960s, I lamented the many wrong episodes that PC promoted. Along comes my good friend, former Santa Cruz resident, and KSCO talk host, Andy Anderson, who exposed for us what our own media either did not know or was too embarrassed to tell, and that is the following. Many Israelis and the rest of us want to know, why didn't the soldiers at Fort Hood, attacked by the U.S. Army major-turned-terrorist, return fire? When a Muslim goes Muslim in Israel, he's typically shot to death within seconds by someone for screaming Allah Akbar and shooting. In contrast with the Israeli experience, it took 10 minutes before a civilian police officer at Fort Hood was able to shoot and stop Muslim fanatic Nidal Malik Hassan. During those minutes, Hassan killed 13 soldiers and shot and injured 30 others. How could that happen? How could so many people trained in the strategies and tactics of modern warfare be so defenseless? The answer, and this may astonish many Americans, is that the victims were unarmed. U.S. soldiers are not allowed to carry guns for personal protection, even on a 340-acre base quartering more than 50,000 troops. Is this believable? So it goes in brain-dead liberal America, and our current liberal president vigorously promotes that philosophy. It's also liberal brain-dead to Mirandize enemies known to want to annihilate Americans. Fort Hood is a gun-free zone thanks to regulations adopted in one of the very first acts signed into law by anti-gun president Bill Clinton in March 1993. Evidently, that foolish, barbaric law still exists. Contrary to President Obama's crocodile tears, his administration is bent on further disarming the U.S. military and all Americans. Obama and his people will not rest until every American is a sitting duck. The upcoming trial turned circus in New York, re the Guantanamo Bay criminals, will further diminish our respect in our government's judgment by the world, who sees our leader as unrealistic, weak, and impractical. God help us. For your information, Israeli teachers from kindergarten on up are also armed, so a Fort Hood-type slaughter is highly unlikely at an Israeli school or university. Israelis who have had to combat terrorism all their lives are not afraid of guns. They are an armed people, ready, willing, and able to defend themselves and their country. Unlike indoctrinated Americans, paralyzed by fear and political correctness, Israelis understand that people, not guns, kill people. Put another way, guns never kill people. People kill people. Again, kudos to you, Andy Anderson, for this urgent clarification. For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
Well, well, well. Yeah, thanks, Ma. Great commentary as usual, and thanks to Andy for giving Ma the idea on this particular one. 11:14 on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSC. Oh my gosh, we haven't even started hour number two like we're supposed to, or as we're supposed to. So, you know, I refuse to believe that this is the Saturday special, hour number two. Unless we play that first. So let's do that now, okay?
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back.
Yeah, that's what we like to see, a full board or almost a full board. We might have one phone line left for people to call, 479-1080.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO Radio. Bye.
Okay, now I can officially welcome everyone to hour number two of the Saturday special.
KSCO AM 1080, the station for intelligent people only.
Amen.
Stupid people must tune to another station immediately.
Yes, yes. Do not allow us to catch you listening to the station if you're stupid. Okay, 479-1080 is the phone number to call, in area 831 if you want to become part of the program. Our guests today are Harold Griffith, who's a taxpayer advocate, and Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency board member, John Eiskamp. They're both on hold right now and can be brought back on at a second's notice here. But let's go back to the phone lines. Let's see. I think Jan was going to be our next caller, and you are on the air, Jan.
Hi. Hey. Happy New Year.
Hey to you too, thanks.
I just wanted to relate to what's going on in the San Lorenzo Valley Water District to what, different things going on in other parts of the county. Up here in the mountains, we have to pay taxes to the water district, but we receive no water. And all we get for that is we get to vote on who's on the water board.
So wait a minute. So how do you get your water? You have a well then, your own private
well? Well, people up here either have wells, use springs, get water out of the creek, or they have it delivered. Now, I've talked to them about, well, how come you only deliver along the Highway 9 corridor mostly? There's a few exceptions on Bear Creek. They come out to the country club. And Tara Vieira, who's on the board, says, well, you have to pay for the pipes. And we have at least 100 people living up here, and that would be pretty expensive for us to do that. But they're putting pipelines over to Scotts Valley to service the, them over there, because when they had the MTBE and the water, the wells got contaminated, sued the gas companies, got a lot of money. So now they're buying the pipes and everything, and SLV is doing all this to get water to Scotts Valley, whereas the water travels over our land when it rains, goes down there, and then we pay taxes on it, but we don't get any of it.
That's what I don't quite understand that, and that's not something that, I would think, you know, you and Gordy and other...
Well, we don't even get electricity, but let's not go there right now.
Oh, okay.
The San Lorenzo Valley Water District had a, over 1,000 acres they were going to sell. It was called Waterman's Gap. And we, a bunch of us tried to get a referendum to put it on the ballot. They won't let the people vote on anything. And then they had a $19 million bid from Big Creek so that they would you know, go in and keep it sustainably logged. They're the best in the world at this.
Yeah.
$19 million. Well, the people on the Water District are basically Sierra Club members and Valley Women's Club members. And so they do the bidding of the Sierra Club, and they didn't want us to keep this land. They wanted to sell it for $11 million, and it went to the Semper Virens, and then they donated it to the state. So we can't even go on the land anymore. Whereas they could have had $19 million and kept the land, and we could have had the fire danger reduced. Now, it just doesn't make sense to me that they couldn't have taken the $19 million and used that extra, you know, they got 11, so, you know, $8 million. We could have put pipes in all over these mountains to the people.
So I guess the Pajaro Valley thing is not all that unusual in its outrageousness.
Well, it is right, totally so. Outrageous. I'm glad Harold's on this. Also, when I started going to the supervisors' meetings, I came in on a spot where they were talking about the levees in Watsonville.
Yeah.
And they got sued there. And when I came back to the supervisors to do something about it, pay it back, Marty Wormhoot said, we don't have the money to pay it back. So they just declare, oh, we can do all this, but we don't have the money to pay for it if we're discovered for doing something wrong.
Oy.
So we got a lot of people.
What can you say? All you can do is just shrug your shoulders. I mean, what can you do?
Well, you need to watch who you're voting in on these water boards and all these agencies, because these people, a lot of them are connected to the people who are taking us down.
All right, these are two great questions. I mean, one great question for two great people, Harold and John. So I'm going to thank you for your call, Jan. Appreciate
your call. Oh, thank you,
MC. Take care, and Happy New Year again. okay, so Harold, what can be done? Anything other than what Jan said?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that I got involved in all this political stuff. 10 years ago, I sued the county because they had an illegal utility tax, and you bring it up to them, and they just ignore you. Now we have this one. I mean, and Jan is right about that. There's a whole bunch of things like this, and we're all taught in school that we have a lot of power, and that the government, you know, we can put things in the state constitution, and the government's required to follow it and stuff. Jan and all of these people are right exactly about what's going on. So are you, MZ. We've been told that we have a lot of power. In reality, we have almost no power. If like these people did, they sued the PV Water for having an illegal tax, they're signing up to pay the attorney's bills that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. They won the lawsuit so they didn't have to pay it. So in other words, most people are intimidated, okay? And they won't join in a lawsuit to sue the government when they're breaking the law. So what do? You could try to do it like I do and just file the lawsuit yourself, but that takes a lot of time and effort. And you know what? The judges don't respect me. I didn't go to law school. And even if I had gone to law school, it still doesn't make it automatic to win when you're on the right side of these questions.
I wonder if we could ever get a judge to come, a sitting judge to come on KSCO.
I doubt it, but it would be nice to try.
Okay, we're going to try. We're going to try. And you know, there's a number of them. We'll, because I want to ask these questions. How it's like our whole system has gone down the toilet. I mean, there's no Prop 187, even though the people voted through.
Exactly.
You know? How come someone hasn't declared Prop 13 unconstitutional?
Tried, but it went to the California Supreme Court, and then they resurrected it, basically.
Oh, is that okay? So
way back at the beginning in the 80s, they declare.
If it went there now, it would probably be overturned, right?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Because right now we're still lucky enough to have like 5 out of the 7 judges are totally right behind Proposition 13. 2 of them might be wobblers, but 5 of them are solidly behind it. And the whole thing is really amazing when you look at it. We've been told that this is democracy and we vote and we pass these laws and the government has to follow the laws and all that. But, you know, since there's no pain when they break the law, none of these people on the PV Water Board went to jail when the taxes were declared illegal. They're still trying to collect illegal taxes. You see, there's no pain. There's no punishment for them to continue when they continue to break the law.
Hey,
why
John,
would they stop doing it?
Hey, John Eiskamp, are you agreeing with what Harold Griffith is saying?
Well,
or do you think people on the board that you sit on, should some of them should be in jail?
No, that's not my, I certainly would not comment on that. But, you know, I think by and large, most people, and including my fellow board members, we have three board members who were appointed. Okay, there are 4 who were elected by district, but we all represent the public in whole. But there are 3 that are appointed, one by Monterey County Board of Supervisors, one by the City Council of the City of Watsonville, and one by Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors. And these are all selected from names who are approved generally by the farm bureaus. So, you know, and then 4 of us are elected. But, you know, quite frankly, I think all of us, and I can't really speak for everybody else, but, you know, all of us are trying to participate and do what we feel is the correct thing to do for the public. One of the things that's important to keep in mind is that people who are in executive position, director positions or city councilmen or whatever, or members of the Board of Supervisors, are representing the public to government. In other words, it's their responsibility to make sure that government does things which are conducive to improving the and betterment of the public in general. And sometimes this gets kind of lost in the shuffle. And as we become members of these organizations and whatnot and are subject to slings and arrows thrown at us from the public, there sometimes develops what you might call a bunker mentality. An attitude develops where it's us against the public. And unfortunately, I think we see that to some extent in the PV Water Management Agency.
Right.
I
invited Dennis Osmer to be a host on KSCO, at least an occasional, during our liberal hour, and he might do it.
He might.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, because it would be great to, you know, I don't know if Tom in Watsonville, who's on hold, or Harold, I don't know what Harold at Aptos is going to say. I don't know what Mike in Soquel is going to say. I don't know what Diego in Watsonville, nor Richard in Watsonville. Boy, we have lines jammed now, so... We should get to those lines. Okay, hold on, John. Here we will continue. You're listening to the Saturday Special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. And if it's not your favorite radio station, well, there's something wrong with you. What more can I say? okay. I don't mean to sound arrogant, but it's true. If it's not your favorite radio station, there's something wrong with you. It's as simple as that. Mike and Soquel, welcome to the Saturday Special on KSCO. You're on.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
It's occurring to me as I sit and listen to this. how are you guys going to be held accountable for breaking the law? Well, it occurred to me that if enough people inundated the office of the district attorney, either in Monterey County or Santa Cruz County, and put pressure on these people to come down on your board and other boards and the county board of supervisors and everybody else for breaking the laws, then maybe you guys would change your mind and get off of our backs. We cannot be taxed and taxed and taxed and taxed and be run out of our homes. Okay? It just can't happen. You guys are
Well, what you're suggesting...
You guys are all accountable to us. We are not accountable to you.
I don't think the guys that you're talking to are even listening to your favorite radio station. I don't think they want to.
And
you're not talking, I ain't you guys, and John Eyes Camp ain't you
I'm
guys, and Harold
board
Griffin.
Members who are listening, Mike.
Yeah, well, I would be surprised. I don't know. Maybe
the district attorney's office doesn't respond to people breaking the law, then people around here ought to be calling the state attorney general's office and complain to him. If enough of us did that.
Do you think, well, Jerry does like us. Jerry likes KSCO.
Well, I'm listening to a man who's sitting on that board who acknowledges that laws are being broken, but I want to know from him right now what he's doing about it. If he can't do anything about it, maybe he shouldn't be sitting on that board.
Now, was that a nice thing to say to
no,
the only reasonable
I'm
person?
I'm listening to this, Mike, and I'm getting mad about it.
Okay, John.
I'm seeing this stuff happening, and nobody is being held accountable.
John, can you do your best to dematify Mike and Soquel?
Yes, I am an elected member of the board, and quite frankly, I was elected in 2000. I ran. No one ran against me in 94, and no one ran against me, or 2004. And nobody ran against me in 2008, so I'm still there.
If you acknowledge laws are being broken,
well, that's not a way to hold on. One second.
What are you doing about it?
That's my opinion. My personal opinion is
to
charge the augmentation charge is levying an unconstitutional charge. But that's not the opinion shared by my other board members.
I just put Mike on hold so he has to listen to you, because if he talks, we won't hear him. Go ahead.
My interpretation of the court ruling, which is very, very explicit. I won't read it to you right now, but I do happen to have it here. But it basically says the lawsuit which we're talking about was filed by the agency against the public. Okay, and in that decision, the court ruled that was requested to rule on whether or not the ordinance imposing this $40 increase of the augmentation charge in 2003 was constitutional or valid is the term. In order to rule whether or not the ordinance which authorized the imposition of the charge was valid, the court first had to determine whether the charge itself was valid. And they did that. They said it was not. It was in violation of Constitution. Therefore, the ordinance was invalid. Now, the decision rendered was with respect to the ordinance, and there's no penalty phase to that. It would have required a secondary lawsuit of some sort to force the agency to pay the uncollected charges. The ordinance itself does not impose the charges; it just authorizes the agency to do so. So it's a complicated legal question, and about a little bit to really going on.
Well,
but,
Mike isn't on with us, but he's on hold. He's hearing all this, but I can imagine he's getting even more hot under the collar because he would like some sort of what should be done.
What could be done or what can be done to stop the charges. Well, first of all, and I'm going to speak as a public citizen and not as a member of the board, one can refuse to pay the charge. Call the agency's bluff and see whether or not the agency takes it any further. If they do, then any individual
I'll do that myself now.
Any individual has the right to file a cross complaint if they are taken to court, claiming that they have been wrongly affected by the charge,
or take me, or in my case, have me reported to a credit
to
collections. Yeah, I'll put that out. I'll throw down the gauntlet right now.
But one of the
I am not.
Problems.
I am not. I am fine. I am finally not going to pay the fee that I should have not been paying for all these years. But I was chicken bleep. I'm not chicken bleep anymore.
Well, it's whether or not you're, you know, willing to be intimidated. You have to remember that the a public agency like the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency, if they go to court with you, they're using your money basically to pay the attorneys to file to go after you. And this is one of the, you know, this is, in my opinion, is a very bad thing. But the agency is in a very bad financial position at this point, and they, I presume, my other fellow board members of the board, well, I know that they're of that opinion, feel they have no other alternative but to continue trying to impose this charge, and yet come up with, in the near future, an alternative that is going to have to be proposed to the public for approval to generate even more money.
Okay. All righty. Listen, Mike and... Oh, geez, I can't bring Mike up for some reason here. Okay, here he is. Oh, no, and now John's gone. Oh, this is terrible. Here, let me bring John back on. John, are you there still?
Hello?
John, are you there?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm sorry I didn't lock you in. Mike, I hope that answered your question.
No.
Okay. I don't know.
I still want to know who holds elected officials accountable for breaking laws.
You, the public.
Well, I don't see that happening. I don't see any recalls going on. I don't see district attorney's offices investigating you guys. I don't
Mike,
see nothing.
Mike.
I don't hear about it.
I think the problem is most of us have other things to do in our lives, probably yourself included. And all, unless you wanted to spearhead a drive to do that. What if you want to, you got all the free advertising you want on KSCO. Okay? But I don't have the time myself to do this. And I don't know of anybody in the world who has the time to do this. And I think that's what these people, I think that's what these jackals in the government are counting on. You know?
Well, Mike, if you don't pay your water bill, you know, they're going to turn you over to collection.
Well, okay. Maybe.
So, how can you not pay?
I won't.
But you're going to wind up in big, deep trouble.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. And everybody's going to watch.
I pay 13 different property tax assessments to the schools district because that's what they want.
Yeah.
13 of them.
Yeah. Well, someone's
and
John, aren't a lot of people? Haven't there been a lot of people who've refused to pay?
Yes,
over the years?
Only about 40% of the bills have been, or of the
for
total amount
you,
billed has been paid.
Those of you who are listening, call your district attorney's office and start complaining.
Well, the district attorney has no authority over the PV Water Management Agency because
he's
a three county district.
He's the local law enforcement official, and you guys are breaking the law.
Well, that's correct.
So,
in my opinion.
So, I mean, Mike makes a good point. Anyhow, we gotta move on. Mike, thanks so much for the call.
Bye-bye.
Okay, 479-1080 if you want to give us a call, or mz@ksco.com if you want to shoot us an email. Let's see, Tom in Watsonville is next. Tom, welcome to KSCO. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, this whole thing started with the best of intentions. And that, you know, my dad was Ray Amrine. He was one of the ones that helped draft this legislation.
Oh,
and
wow.
And I mean, it was with the community was behind it, and we knew we had a problem with the water. And like my dad was, he's pretty much an environmentalist, and he wanted to protect the water resources here, but also was a strong believer in property rights. And this was an attempt to create a local district to control our local resources, and it went off the rails when it got up to the state legislature, and they drafted the legislation, finished it up there, left some loopholes, and then when the district went into action, what people got to understand is that what's at stake here is hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, and it started out with a pipeline they were going to build from the Central Valley over here that was going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. There's huge financial interests involved in this, and they knew the district, and I was on the board at the time, the district knew they didn't have the public support to take the vote to the people to get that pipeline built, so they just went ahead, ignored the law, started assessing money, they were just going to do it, and they were warned they were going to get sued, they were warned it wasn't going to work, they went ahead and did it anyway, And it took a long time to get to the point that we're at now, but that's where it started. And moving forward to unravel the whole thing, it's going to take the people, the property owners of the area, you know, they've got to rise up, and it's going to take a popular movement to put a stop to this. Because as John points out, and it may be through court action or whatever, but an individual can't do it because there's so many financial interests in this. And remember, this is about water. It's about who controls water. And who controls water on the Central Coast that's like the most powerful, you know, that would be the most powerful position you could hold. So you can imagine what's at stake here. And even when I was on the board, it was hardball. I mean, there was, you know, people were threatened in the parking lot after meetings and everything else. I mean, this is about a huge amount of money. The whole agriculture, you know, industry, the area is going to be affected by this and the growth management. So that's what we're up against. And people, it gets down to when smaller individuals try to protect their rights, there's this whole overburden of consultants and engineers and government officials and large interests that want to control the water. They don't want individuals to have their individual rights in this. And that's, I think, is, you know, what's at the source of it.
Yeah. Well, it just blows me away that any agency or individual can be so arrogant as to say, hey, you don't, it's not your water, even though you have your own well and you have water rights and mineral rights on your own property. It drives me nuts.
And again, it goes back to it's arrogance, but it's also power grab. Because that's what it's coming. You know, follow the money, and when you think about it in those terms, you can see what, you know, ultimately what we're fighting over is who will control the most precious resource that we have here.
Tom, did your dad live to see any of this, what's going on now?
No, he died just before this thing got finished. That was kind of sad. He was kind of depressed, you know, really actually very depressed about the whole thing and really didn't have the energy. And, you know, at that time he was sick and, you know, it was just hard for him. And then John Eiskamp came along and really carried the ball. And that kind of, I know that was a bright light for my dad, you know. In the end, but he didn't live to see, you know, maybe it's just as well because we won, you know, the lawsuit was won, but forcing this agency to do what's right, it has turned out to be, you know, it's almost impossible.
Sure. Okay. Hey, Tom, thanks for your call to the Saturday special. Appreciate it. 479-1080 is the phone number. We got one or two lines open, but we have quite a number of people to get to, including Harold of Aptos, Saint and Sam Benito, and Richard in Watsonville. Richard in Watsonville has been waiting the longest, so he'll be up next. Caller wants to know if these guys get annual income for being on the board. That's a good John Eiskamp question. What do you say, John?
We're paid $100 per board meeting. So we have generally, we have been having one board meeting a month. So our my payment from the agency is $100 less withholding, so it's totals about $90 a month.
Okay.
So it's not something I'm doing to buy a trip to Europe, let me tell you.
Okay. Let's see. Information for you from Terry B. Davis. Let's see. I have this information. Give me all the. Oh, no. This is the wrong. I thought this was relevant to the program here, but it's not. Alan Mulho has sent a nice email here. It says, Michael, I'm a historian in process of writing a book about early transportation on the coast. In my research, I found some interesting situations I believe are pertinent to the argument. In 1866, there were artesian wells at the Moss Landing Warehouse on Sandholt Road, and shortly thereafter at the mouth of the Pajaro River at Camp Goodall. These are all within 50 feet of the ocean. It's my belief that what is a major contributor to saltwater intrusion is that we have actually interrupted the recharge of freshwater barrier at the coast. Three major things occurred over time. First was a concerted effort to drain swamps, now called wetlands. starting in about 1872. Elkhorn Slough was over three times as large as it is now, a huge recharge basin. Secondly, the coming of Moss Landing Harbor, the opening was allowing salt water in simultaneously. The Salinas River mouth was closed, and the river was rerouted to go straight out to sea down near the Dole plant in Monterey County. The river used to provide a barrier all along the coast, all the way to the bluff at the north end of Moss Landing. Third, the Pajaro River had large settling lagoons north and south, and south to the river at one time reached within 1 mile or so of the mouth of the Salinas River. The Pajaro has been channelized to prevent flooding Pajaro Dunes housing. These low-lying areas are where they are claiming the most effects of saltwater intrusion. In one article I found, they were saying that in the middle of the severe drought, the only place that there were lots of water was the wells along Beach Road. I think the water agency experts have chosen to ignore historical information because they want to use their computer modeling to create millions of dollars worth of boilerplate reports. The agency claims a huge deficit in the basin, and if that is true, why don't the amounts they bill reflect that? They are billing for usage based on metered wells, yet the actuals never seem to approach the amounts the models claim are being used. Is this whole thing based on bogus information? That's from Alan in Watsonville. Thanks, Alan Mulho. Any comment on that, John?
Well, the reason I originally decided to run for the board back in 2000 was because of presentations that were made by agency so-called experts, engineering experts, which were the results of some mathematical modeling that had been done previously on the hydrology of the basin. And one of the comments that was made, or one of the principal points that was made, was something that, to me, as a physical chemist who's actually taught at the university level and whatnot,
yeah, you're a Stanford graduate,
found to be totally unbelievable, and that's really what got me to put my name in the hopper, you might say, and become elected, but. That's neither here nor there. These modeling activities are all useful. They have what I call heuristic value, but they really don't provide any new information. In other words, the validity of a model really depends on the validity of the data that you feed into it, and there's very little data to feed into any model around here.
Hey, I want to loin a new void. What's heuristic mean?
Well, I'm going to let everybody look that up. It has teaching value. Oh. In other words, it has instructive value, not necessarily factual value.
All righty. You're listening to the Saturday Special with John Eiskamp, Harold Griffith, and MZ. And our next caller is going to be none other than our good friend Richard N. Watsonville. Richard, you're on the air.
Thank you, Michael. How you doing?
Pretty good. Happy New Year to you, Richard.
Yeah, back at you, man. Back at you. It sounds like they got you by the water meter. There you go. But
okay.
You had to register your well. Did everybody in the county have to do that because they came in and said it was mandated by the state?
I don't know. I just remember that I didn't want to do it, and I thought about it, and I figured, well, you shouldn't fight City Hall because,
I know.
You know, there's a lot of things that you can sort of wreck your life if you do too much of that.
But I remember asking you if you put a meter on your well, and you said you weren't going to do that, and you guys all got together and voted not to do that out where you lived, right?
No, it's not. There was no voting, you know.
Did you guys ever put meters on your well?
No, I didn't put a
meter
on my well.
Oh, what are you
going to
do when they make you put the meters on and say it's state-mandated?
I won't do it.
See, that's what this Mr. Eiskamp never says, the word state or mandated. And they use that a lot in those meetings, don't they, Mr. Eiskamp?
Okay, let's bring John back on. Okay, yeah, go. What
okay,
do you have?
Okay, 1992, because I was around here at that time. I was born and raised in Watsonville, quite frankly. In 1992, the agency passed a meter ordinance, which required all wells to have meters on them, except for domestic wells like, you know, private domestic wells. And that
people in Aptos.
Well, not in Aptos. It's only within the district. It was called the meter ordinance. And then in 1993, that meter ordinance required a contract to be signed by the well owner and the agency, allowing them to take responsibility for the meter, which the agency or the landowner would provide. That was then modified in 1993 when the agency imposed the first pumping charge. And at the same time, the ordinance for the meters was amended to include statements that made you, when you signed the contract for the meter, also agreed to pay any charges, the augmentation charge, which was applied. In other words, that not only did you do, and that's, of course, where I think the major problem began.
A lot of people who supported
the metering did not support the augmentation charge.
Let me ask you something. This $100 a month that you get for being on this board, you're elected, you said, right?
Yes.
Now, the other people that are not elected, the ones that are appointed, do they get $100 also?
No, it's the same. Their responsibility and their authority is the same as me.
Okay. I remember when we had this issue one Saturday special, we had this guy named Charles McNeish on there.
Yeah.
And he was replaced by a lady named Bannister.
Mary Bannister, correct.
Okay. McNeish said he was making $125,000 a year.
Well, he's an employee. I'm not an employee of the agency.
Well, I just want to know, how much is she making? You're on the board. You can tell me how much she's making.
Well, it's public information, and I'd hate to be misquoted, but I think it's in that range, if not a little bit higher.
Well, you can tell us.
The thing that gets me is that
are you the one that doesn't get invited to the meetings when they have the Brown Act?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, it's not that. I want to know why does Dennis Osmer call you guys a circus down there, too?
Well,
and that's why he quit, because you guys are running the place like a damn circus down there.
Yeah,
and I've known it since Dave McCabe.
Did he quit? Dave McCabe
is the guy that had the gun.
Oh, now, look, yeah, I don't... That's how far that goes back.
He was replaced by his assistant, Charles McNeish, who I think is up in Scotts Valley ripping off Jan now up there with the old flow people.
Charlie moved on, that's correct, and...
Richard, you guys haven't produced any water yet.
Richard, not a drop. You're kicking up a lot of bleep today.
Well, I've had enough of this Paro Valley Water Management Agency, because when I got into it, I was introduced to the water man by Charles McNeish, who was Dave McCabe. And Dave McCabe winds up getting fired because he's carrying a gun to work. They ask him, why are you carrying a gun to work? That's the prudent thing to do, he said.
Well, look, that's old history, but let me tell you that.
Well, no, the old history is you guys still haven't produced any water.
And yet, the city of Watsonville, you guys
are right next to the sewer plant. You've taken up that land over there on Beach Road now. The city has been nice enough to work with you on this.
No. Wait a minute. That's the city. That doesn't own any of that.
But yet you guys are the ones giving Zwirlin a bad time for a well that he don't even have metered. Why has he got an answer to anybody?
Well, that's the nature of the agency.
I call it hubris.
Do you see why I love Richard N. Watsonville?
I'll tell you what, Richard, let me put it this way. All of us as citizens are responsible to keep government under control, because in fact government is supposed to be representing us.
Tell me the smartest thing the Paro Valley Water Management Agency has done. I'll tell you one. Can you tell me one?
Can I tell you one?
Sure.
No, I can't. That's why I'm on the board.
The smartest thing that they've done is they started that pipeline from the ocean going inland instead of the way they wanted to do it, from inland going to the ocean.
Well, I had a hard time with that.
Otherwise, we'd be paying for a pipeline that we don't even look at. Now, I want to know when you're going to put some ocean water in there and start sending it to us. So we can turn that into fresh water.
Well, you know, one of the problem here is, quite frankly, you know.
No, you run the pipeline from the ocean to the sewer plant. You change the water from salt water to fresh water, and you inject it back into those wells along the coastline that you guys say are salty.
Well, let me just interrupt you for one moment and tell you there is a project that has now been proposed and I believe pretty much approved over in Seaside, where, in fact, they have a similar type of seawater intrusion problem. Now, our seawater intrusion problem is you know, certainly a problem, and it is over there, too. But what they're doing is drilling a set of wells to intercept the area of intrusion, pumping the water out, creating a ditch underwater, you might say.
You know what, John?
Desalinating it and using it for irrigation. Looks
John,
like
you've listened to too many people come in that have called themselves experts and give you guys an education that, you know, pure common sense would tell you that we've had enough earthquakes around here to move that Santa Roma's aquifer around so people cannot get to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you guys spend that money and go find the water? All the water comes to the ocean, man.
Okay.
It all comes to the ocean.
Richard, we have to do a – I just realized it's 11:51.
I see it.
And we have to do our commercial break. So thank you so much for calling. There goes Richard and Watsonville. We have Saint and San Benito, who will probably be our last caller today. We'll see. Stand by here. It's your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. It's hour number two of the Saturday special in the last final 8.5 minutes. And let's do that commercial break. Thank you, Nikki.
It's time to unravel the mysteries of health coverage with Pamela Fugit-Hetrick of DCD Financial and Insurance Services, an authorized independent agent for Anthem Blue Cross.
It's becoming increasingly more difficult for hard-pressed businesses to maintain their employee health insurance plans. If you are a business person in search of lower-cost alternative, I may have the answer for you. This strategy can help your employees pay for individual or family health plans through payroll deductions, and these individual plans may cost as little as one-third the group plans. Use the power of my experience as a health insurance professional. We'll talk over the options to help your employees access their own individual health plan. I will make sure that they get the assistance that they need to choose the best coverage at the most affordable rates.
Unravel the mysteries of your health coverage with Pamela Fugit-Hetrick of DCD Financial and Insurance Services. Go to healthexchangeforall.com for a free quote and then give Pamela a call. That's healthexchangeforall.com.
California Insurance License 0D75558. Anthem Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Association.
Hi, folks. Warren Knox here of Knox Roofing. You know, there's an old expression, if you can't do it right the first time, how the heck are you going to have time to do it again? Well, that's the philosophy here at Knox Roofing. I've got literally thousands of customers who are definitely set for life when it comes to their roof. So we do all types of roofing and repairs. In fact, we have a pretty nice showroom located at 46 El Pueblo Road in Scotts Valley. There you can see all the things you can do to your roof. Also extras such as skylights, sun tunnels, gutters, insulation, solar information, and of course the Knox Garden Box. What's a Knox box? But if you can't get out and about, just give us a call and we'll bring our goods and services to your home. Free estimates. Okay, give Knox Roofing a call today. 461-0634. 461-0634. Thanks, folks.
Hi, everyone. Andy Anderson here. Are you using those little bottles of hand gel that kill germs, bacteria, and other nasties? In today's world, that's smart, especially with the filthy doorknobs, shopping carts, and handrails we touch every day. Did you know that once the alcohol evaporates in a few seconds, goodbye effectiveness. No more protection till you use it again. PureWorks to the rescue. Our FDA-compliant foam, lotion, soap, and spray do not contain alcohol. Their killing power lasts up to 4 hours. PureWorks disinfecting spray is EPA-certified to kill swine flu, bird flu, MRSA, HIV, hepatitis B and C, and for our friends in medicine, kills C. diff, along with a whole host of viruses and bacteria. Molds and fungus, too. It's even safe around pets and children. You'll love how your skin feels with PureWorks, soft and supple. No more dry skin. Here's to a little peace of mind knowing that your hands are still germ-free hours later. Call now, toll-free, 888-245-0300 to get your hands on PureWorks and get PureWorks on your hands. That's 888-245-0300.
There is no doubt about it. It's time to get down to business with SCORE, SBDC, Santa Cruz County Bank, and KSCO. Hello, I'm David Heald, President and CEO of Santa Cruz County Bank.
And I'm Sandy Eason, Executive Vice President of Santa Cruz County Bank. Each weekday on KSCO's morning and afternoon commute programs, you will hear small business tips voiced by Teresa Tomei and staff from the Central Coast Small Business Development Center.
And each Tuesday on KSCO's morning and afternoon commute programs, you will hear small business questions and answers from the counselors of SCORE.
If you have a small business question you would like answered, email Michael Olson at mo@ksco.com. score.com, and SCORE will find the right answer for you.
It's time to get down to business, and the best place to start is with SCORE and SBDC on KSCO's morning and afternoon commute programs.
Brought to you by Santa Cruz County Bank. Put your money where your life is. Santa Cruz County Bank, member FDIC, and Think Local First, County of Santa Cruz.
Sunshine of your love. All righty, good. Yeah, thank you, Nikki. Wonderful bumper music here. Welcome back to the closing minutes. Welcome to the closing minutes. Not welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two. Welcome to the closing minutes of hour number two of the Saturday special on your favorite radio station. The whole county is corrupt. Throw the bastards out, according to Gary and Live Oak. The newspapers are part of the party and taking of the saps who continually vote in the incumbents. The Times Publishing Group has a story with a picture of Fred Keeley and Bob Lee prancing around the Santa Cruz Ballet Theater for Nutcracker. The fact is, Bob Lee, as district attorney, couldn't find a crime if his life depended upon it. Many of the crimes from the Planning Appeals Board to what you are exposing is avoided by the newspapers, and Bob Lee, endorsed for his positions on drugs, and the local corruption can thrive. The people deserve it because they continually vote in incumbents. Throw the bastards out. You know who from Live Oak. I do. It's Gary. Gary in Live Oak. Okay. Let's see here. Saint in San Benito. Welcome to the Saturday special. You're on the air.
Because you'll drive everybody out.
I know. Yeah, I've been told that before. So I just thank you for reinforcing that.
I'm going to give you a little hysterical background, too.
Okay, we got less than 2 minutes, sorry, but so speed it up if you can.
Okay, I will. The San Felipe Project, we voted in this county, and the old ranchers around me that were much older than I am, they're all dead now, they said, don't vote for it. Anytime the state gets involved in anything, it's going to be screwed up. We can build reservoirs up there. So we voted for the San Felipe Project. That's what was going to bring water over to you, too. It brought it to us in San Benito County. We have many hundreds, if not thousands, of acres laying fallow, and the Central Valley has many hundreds of thousands of acres laying fallow because of the Sierra Club and the Delta Schmelt. And so that's why there's no water there. And it was pie in the sky. And that's what they tried to tell me. Never deal with the state. And we have a water district here that we still pay. On my ranch, I have still an artesian well, but that's only for household use at all. But
I got to blame myself for this, Saint. I'm sorry. You were on hold for so long, and I'm not very good, and I got to apologize to you and Harold and Aptos. It's the end of the program. I just have enough time to thank Harold Griffith. Thank you, Harold.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you very, very much. And keep doing what you do. And really want to thank John Eiskamp. Thank you, John. Okay, John.
Well, thank you very much. And I encourage people to send in their cards and letters to the agency with their opinions, and most importantly, attend our board meetings.
Okay, great. Thank you. And that's about it. This program will be repeated tonight between the hours of 10 p.m. and midnight, or on demand at SaturdaySpecial.com or the new KSCO.com website, where you should all register right now. That's about it.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. Here's Fox News in progress.
The fallout from this.
Instead of succumbing to partisanship and division, let's summon the unity that this moment demands. Let's work together with a seriousness of purpose to do what must be done to keep our country safe.
And he had seeming agreement in the GOP response.
Powerful forces may be aligned against us, but when the challenges are greatest,
Americans always join ranks.
Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell also referencing the country's economic woes and offering reassurance the U.S. will get through its current set of problems. That jetliner plot now believed to have originated with the Al-Qaeda branch in Yemen, and that country's military has today deployed several hundred additional troops to two areas seen as Al-Qaeda strongholds where the accused would-be bomber may have visited. South Carolina Senator Jim DeMint has been holding up a Senate vote on President Obama's Transportation Security Agency head nominee, Errol Southers, reportedly over concerns Southers would back the unionization of TSA employees. But it looks like that delay isn't the only thing potentially affecting the vote.
There's more controversy swirling around the nominee to head up the Transportation Security Administration. The Washington Post reports that some senators already knew before they voted to confirm Errol Southers in committee that he had mischaracterized a personal incident in his past. That incident is from 20 years ago, when Southers was an FBI agent and accessed confidential records about his ex-wife's boyfriend twice. In November, Southers told a Senate committee that he had asked a police officer to get those records, but a day after the vote, Southers admitted he did the searches himself. In Washington, Caroline Shively, Fox News Radio.
A holiday weekend tragedy in Greenwich, Ohio, 75 miles southwest of Cleveland. Two adults, two children dead in a mobile home fire. The cause not determined. You're listening to Fox News Radio. Fair and balanced.
You're in the Fox Light.
Dave Matthews Band has this week's Fox Light Music Release Roundup all to themselves, as the only new release of any consequence this week is Europe 2009, a box set compiling Live from Lucca, a 3-CD document of their 3-hour marathon show in the Italian city, and Across the Pond, a DVD shot at Brixton Academy in London. And rounding us out for the week and the year are the U.S. top 10 biggest selling albums of 2009, according to Billboard. Starting at the top is Taylor Swift's Fearless, her second album, with sales of over 5 million. Just behind at number two is I Am Sasha Fierce, the latest from Red Hot Beyonce. Number three belongs to Nickelback with Dark Horse, which was co-produced by Mutt Lange. For numbers 4 through 10, you need to check out the Fox Light podcast free at foxnewstalk.com or the Fox Light blog at foxnewsradio.com. In New York, Rob Moore, Fox News Talk.
The Fox Light.
Keep listening for more focus from the Fox Light on Fox News Talk.
Afghanistan's President Hamid Karzai, who's just begun his new term in office after a questionable election, already in political trouble, the country's parliament rejecting 17 of his 24 cabinet nominees, many of whom had been criticized as having been picked for reasons other than their competency. As China continues its rapid modernization, upgraded militarization is part of it, with an eye toward future expansion.
China's military is floating the idea of a global navy in state media and on its website. But energy researcher Dr. David Zweig says America really has nothing to worry about, at least for another 100 years. After that,
we are going to have to get used to the fact that there will be China's navy out there on the high seas with aircraft carriers, at least a couple, and docking rights probably between Africa and South China.
China has made a priority of protecting its oil shipments, but Zweig says its push in the South China Sea for a 200-mile exclusive economic zone could be a pushback against the U.S. In Shanghai, Bill Marcus, Fox News Radio.
For newborn siblings, their birth is bound to define their relationship for the rest of their lives.